A man enters a CEO role with a bag, and in that bag is belief, meaning that it's full of belief. Everyone who hired him believes and trusts that he knows what he's doing. I truly have learned to see that when women take senior roles, we have to prove ourselves. Our bag is empty, and we have to fill it with belief. And it leaves with you with a lot less room for error and mistakes, which we all make and need to be able to make. And I think entering a role in technology, which quite frankly is still in this day, 2024, 96% male, right? CEOs are 96% males. In technology, there was this extra burden of the women aren't, CEOs. So, that desire and feeling of having to be perfect was tough in the beginning there. There was no leadership team here at all. It was basically when I joined me and a whole bunch of really smart and talented junior people that I was able to build and develop. But coming here to that small company that really no one really knew to being what it is today, which is this global company that transacted $17 billion in wholesale GMV last year, that is the standard for the fashion industry where everyone knows our name. I mean, I am so proud of what the team and I built here to be able to take that company and make it into this.
Welcome to the She's So Sweet podcast, where we interview accomplished women who have worked their way to the C-suite. I'm your host, Christy Falteruso, Chief Customer Officer and award-winning Customer Success Executive. I am so thrilled to introduce today's guest, Kristen Sevilia, the CEO of Jour. Hi, Kristen. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Christy. Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be reconnected.
I know it's been so long. For our listeners that don't have this context, Chris and I worked together at The Knot. For those of you who are not familiar, it's a life stage media company that's been around since the 90s. And Chris and I got to work together for about 4 years while I was at The Knot. And that was feels like an eternity ago.
Does, it really does.
And I can't wait to hear about all the wonderful things that you've been up to since then. Now, before we get to all of the good stuff today, I want to start by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself. So if you could, let's share a little bit about Jour. Tell us about what that company is, what they do, and let's talk about your current role there as CEO.
Sure. So Jour is a wholesale management platform. So we digitize the process of wholesale buying and selling. And when you think about our industry, the concept of digitalization from a consumer perspective has been around for a very long time. Amazon in the 90s, selling their books and then everything else under the sun. And all of our retailers all having a digital presence. But honestly, largely until the pandemic, folks in wholesale were doing it manually on a pen and paper. So Jour came in, originally launched about 15 years ago, with this concept of digital wholesale. Very simply, digital line sheets, digital order taking, iPads going with you to trade shows or to showrooms. And rather than writing things down like I did years ago as a buyer at Macy's, you're doing it and selecting like you would on any website.
That's so interesting. Tell me a little bit about what does the organization look like?
Yeah, so we are a global company. We have 12 global offices headquartered in New York City, about 150 employees, give or take. And we, again, have a focus on a client base of the top brands and retailers in the industry. So on the retail side, we have 600,000 of them, but big
Wow.
names like a Neiman Marcus or a Shopbop or a Selfridges in Europe use Jour to do their wholesale buying. And then from a brand perspective, we actually have 14,000 brands in the network and big names like Armani, Valentino, Kate Spade, Tory Burch all use Jour to do their wholesale selling digitally. And we make the connection and allow them to shop without having to go to the showroom if they can't make it. And what's interesting is the concept, as I mentioned, was launched 15 years ago. And business was growing okay until something called the pandemic in 2020.
Of course.
And it is the pandemic that taught the industry that digital wholesale is actually okay and doable. And post-pandemic, what people realized is, why are we traveling to every showroom and every show when really we can do a lot of this from our homes, from our couch? So that really accelerated Jura's growth. And since then, it has become a standard in the industry and fashion where we play that you use Jura to do your wholesale buying and selling.
That's so interesting. And it's, you know, honestly, it's another success story that came out of the pandemic, right? Because it definitely was this push towards this digitalization of this work that you mentioned, right? Used to be done by pen and paper in person.
Yep.
Now, talk to me about your role there. So you stepped into the CEO role when exactly?
Yeah. So in 2017, March of 2017, it's been about 7 years.
Oh my gosh.
I stepped in to be the CEO of Jura. So as you mentioned, I came from The Knot, where we worked together. Yep. Where I was the president of The Knot, the local marketplace, which was that company's largest business stream, and saw an opportunity to be a CEO. And what was exciting for me is that as a first job as a CEO, you got to learn a lot, no matter where you're coming from, right? And I originally started my career in fashion. I was a buyer at Macy's, went through the executive training program. So really knew this industry quite well and knew how antiquated that process was. So when I was approached by the board of directors of Jura to join, it just seemed like the perfect first CEO job for me because I didn't need to spend time learning the industry. I already had connections. I knew how it worked. My learning was more about how to be a CEO, how to do things that I didn't do as president, raising money, truly being in charge and having no boss and being sort of the buck stops here. So I thought it was a great opportunity and super glad I took it because I'm loving it, but a great first CEO job for me in an industry that I already knew.
I love that. Now, obviously, I always say this, it's maybe not so obvious, but maybe you didn't always want to be the CEO. And perhaps when you were a little girl, you didn't think about being the CEO of Jura because obviously that wasn't around then. So when you think back to yourself years ago, what were some of the early career aspirations that you had? What did you want to be when you were little?
Yeah. So I am into sports. I played sports my whole life and I really consider myself very lucky. And I always like to tell this quick story. That when I was really little, and I'm going to date myself here. This is the early 1970s. There were not sporting opportunities for girls. Everything was about boys' teams. And in 1972, a very important law passed called Title IX that basically at a high level said that for any government funded program, whether it's schools or sports, athletics, town sports, anything funded, if you offer it for little boys, you have to offer it for little girls too. And that was transformative in my life because back that 1972 had passed. By 1975, I was about 5 years old, and the first girls soccer team on Long Island, where I'm from, was created. And in order to have enough girls on that team, they had to recruit girls ages 5, which was me, to ages 13. To all be in the same league. And that's how they were able to create this team. But sports for me has been instrumental in teaching me how to win, how to lose. If you lose, how to win next time, how to focus, how to work as a team. But as a little girl, I think it's amazing that I wanted to be a soccer player when I grew up, a professional soccer player, which kind of didn't even really exist back then. But that was my aspirations initially, was that I wanted to be an athlete.
I love that. My daughter plays soccer. She's been playing soccer since she's little. And so I love it as a sport. And I do think, like, obviously you being able to do that so early after Title IX, like, I think that that's such an amazing journey that you got to be a part of very early on. Now, I'm sure at some point there was a pivot from soccer. So at what point did you go, okay, maybe soccer is not going to be the career path? How did that kind of evolve? And then how did you kind of see that start to transition into your actual career path that started, which I believe was at Macy's, right?
Correct. So I played soccer all the way through high school, which was an amazing transition from not having girls' teams to having a soccer team where we won the state championship. Like, it was a whole new world. Ended up going to college. I went to Dartmouth College, not for soccer. That was the first blocker for me. I was not recruited for soccer. I was actually recruited for track and field or track. I was a middle distance runner. But I never thought I was going to be a professional Olympian track athlete when I was in college. I think when I took out of college, I was a history major. I liked creativity. But my favorite thing, honestly, was coming from the sports aspect, was working as a team. And I really enjoyed and thrived in leading teams, whether it was a relay team or the whole team or rallying teams at track meets or after losses, picking people up. I knew I wanted to do something in the leadership field. And when I graduated school, I had a couple of job opportunities. And the one that I jumped on, I was super interested in, was the Macy's Executive Training Program. Not because I was into retail. To be quite honest with you, my friends today laugh that I am in retail and luxury retail to boot, because I think I wore sweatpants my entire time and did not know any of the brand names when I was younger at all. No, I mean, you know, maybe I knew Nike for sure and any of the sports names, but not the luxury guys. So knowing that I wanted to lead, the idea of a management training program, I felt like I could learn how to manage anything. And in my mind, I was like, I am sure it won't be retail that I stay in, but by all means, management is a great field to be in. Yeah. I'm doing it. So went through that program, which to this day, I think is a phenomenal program. I am so sad that Macy's doesn't still have this program, because I, you know, when you look at a lot of top retailers today, there's a large group of us who went through this executive training program.
It's interesting. I was just going to ask you, does that program still exist? And so you answered my question and that it doesn't. Are there other companies that offer that type of training program? Because I know that a long time ago, right, a lot of these big brands, even when you think of like automotive and retail and all these companies, they used to make large investments into these management programs. And you just don't see that as much anymore. Do you know if that is an investment that some of these companies are still making?
It's definitely been in the budget cuts over the years. And it is sad, because I look at the women and men that I did this program with. And when you really think about what this program did, it was a sequential program that made you do each side of a job, each side of a role. So you started out in stores. And I remember being like, I'm a college graduate and I'm sitting here and I'm stocking sock shelves. And I'm like, but I never like took it as a negative. Cause yeah. I'm like this, I'm learning what it's like to be in stores. And honestly, I was you're the manager on day one. And I was a manager of, in the handbags and hosiery and accessories department at Macy's in Stamford, Connecticut. And the people I managed were all, I'm going to say older, but they're like my age now, but they're all in their 50s and 60s. And I'm this 22-year-old hotshot who needs to find a way to motivate and manage people who've been at the store for many, many, many years. Right. So the idea of empathetic management was born very early, and learning, not being afraid as a leader to learn from the people beneath you who know how it works. And how to get the best out of them, right? So I was very fortunate, and that's why I love the program so much, to do that. And then they move you to, the buying office. But then when you're a buyer, you're buying for stores, you understand what it's like to be in the store. So you always understood the other side. And I think it made for empathetic leadership. And I think it's one of the reasons why a lot of people out of that program are super successful today. They truly know how to lead people.
It's such a shame that they don't make those investments anymore, but I get it, right? You got to cut somewhere. It's sad. Now, obviously this all contributed to your path to where you got to today. So I'd love if we could share a couple of those pivotal moments for you, right? You've obviously had to make some really strategic career decisions. Yep. So what were some of those real pivotal decisions that you had to make, or those moments in your career that really helped get you to the C-suite?
Yeah, I always like to talk about both sides of pivotal decisions, because I think that a disservice to women also is that you always have to be pushing for a promotion. You always have to be out there and move, 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 move. And I think that that's not fair either. And as a woman who has raised four children, I have four children, there were times in my career where jobs were offered to me that I didn't take, and got some slack from people around me for not taking, because it was sort of that mentality of you have to always go. And if it's offered to you, you take it and that's it. And I guess I had enough confidence in myself to know it would be offered again. So for me, I remember I had 3 kids under 5. I was offered this job that would have required a relocation, big title. And I remember sitting at home and saying, I actually don't want to do this. And then getting to a place of saying, and I'm okay with that, right? So I consider that one of them because it then I landed somewhere else. You know what I mean? So it's like, I don't want, especially working moms, to always feel like every job offer coming your way, you have to take it. You've just burned your bridge and lost that opportunity because it's actually not true. Just that's just one aside I wanted to say. But then I made a big jump from, I'd say, corporate America, Macy's, Linens and Things, big companies, financially sound, to my first startup, which was The Knot. I jumped over there as a vice president of the e-commerce side of the business, which I had experience with. I understood e-commerce. I was an early e-commerce adopter. I was on the team that launched LNT.com at Linens and Things. So I got it. But I think the braver move was when I was about 7 or 8 years into my career at The Knot, and I was asked by the CEO at the time, David, to completely change my career to something I'd never done before, which was he asked me to run the local sales team. It was the company's largest division. Take note that I had never been in sales. Now I can do it, right? I've done acquisitions and business development, which is sales in its essence, but I had never been a salesperson when my entire salary depended on me selling a product to somebody and working on commissions and the whole structure of that. So when David first asked me, I first said no, because I'm like, I'm not qualified for this. I said, David, I've never run a sales team. How am I going to be in charge of this whole division when I haven't done it? And David's response was, you're an operator. You figure stuff out. You're going to figure this out. So after some contemplation, I said, you know what? I'm doing it. So big jump. I remember being very nervous on that first day, standing in front of a sales team. I was the e-commerce person who they kind of knew. Why is she over here in charge of us now? And taking over this 70-person sales organization with all of its elements of marketing, selling. But fortunately, once again, use that skill I learned early of a great team beneath me. Let them teach you, you know, and did that. And it ended up being a really big success story. I joined a division and we took something that at the time was struggling. It was the largest division of the company and it was not growing. And the team and I were able to turn that into a huge success story that ultimately is what got that company sold years later. So definitely, definitely big decision, and big pivot. Then I had been there for 12 years and I was happy, but I started getting that hankering for moving up. And at that point, The Knot had a CEO who had been there fairly new. I think he'd been there 2 years. CEO wasn't going to be in the cards for me at The Knot. So I really needed to decide to leave a place I loved for a brand new opportunity. And honestly, people will tell you the first CEO job is the hardest one to get, because everybody wants an experienced CEO.
Right.
So where does that leave you? This one wasn't particularly hard to get, to be honest with you. It was a good fit for me, but it was definitely a big leap to jump to the CEO role over here at Jure.
All right. Well, that's an amazing story. And all those moments, to your point, are super pivotal to getting to where you need to be. Now, obviously, there wasn't all easy. Right. So what were some of the battle scars? What were some of those, the large challenges or the obstacles that you had to face? And how did you overcome them?
Yeah. So coming to the CEO role, as a woman, I always like to describe this in an analogy. A man enters a CEO role with a bag, and in that bag is belief, meaning that it's full of belief. Everyone who hired him believes and trusts that he knows what he's doing. I truly have learned to see that when women take senior roles, we have to prove ourselves. Our bag is empty and we have to fill it with belief. And it leaves with you with a lot less room for error and mistakes, which we all make and need to be able to make. And I think entering a role in technology, which quite frankly is still in this day, 2024, 96% male, right? CEOs are 96% males. In technology, there was this extra burden of the women aren't, you know, CEOs. So, you know, that desire and feeling of having to be perfect was tough in the beginning, of not feeling like you can make a mistake. And like I mentioned, we all do make mistakes. So for me, it was establishing with the board a relationship in which I filled that bag quickly so that there was room for discussion and thought, and the trust was there to allow me to try new things. Because if you're not making mistakes, it means you're not trying new things. And how are you growing a company? But it was a hard time. It was definitely a lot of pressure on myself for perfection. And those early days of winning over a board of directors, which honestly fund your company, this is a private company here at JOR, to believe in the pivots and changes that I wanted to make. But I do believe my path was harder than if I was a man. And that can be frustrating, right? That can be frustrating.
So how did you balance that, right? Because I think organically, we all strive to be perfect, right? Especially when you are in these senior leadership roles. How did you balance that pressure on yourself that it wasn't hindering you and your performance, right? How were you able to show up authentically every day to be the best version of yourself as a leader while still carrying this immense pressure?
I always believed in any role you ever take in any career that relationships matter, and it's not all politics, and that you have to build these relationships with people. My biggest rule was don't surprise your board of directors. They should never be surprised. Now, that doesn't mean and translate to tell them everything you know and everything that's happening, because they also don't need to know everything, or they're going to go in this roller coaster way that they don't need to. So for me, it was learning when to share and when not to share and how to share it, right? So what I got to fairly early with the relationships that I built there was, don't go day one when the problem arises, because you haven't even had the opportunity to digest the impact of it, you know, or to digest how you're going to solve it. Because it's rare that they're going to solve your problem. Like they could be a sounding board, but they're not going to solve the problem. You and your team are. So for me, it was just learning the right timing. But it was always, but if it's something that's going to be in the press or be out there, or they're going to hear it from someone else, that's a huge problem. They have to hear it from you with the right, in the right context. So for me, that was the big learning, is balancing what to share, what not to share, and when and how to share it.
I love that. Now, obviously, we've had these learnings and these challenges, which is important for us to grow from those. But you've also had tremendous success. And I feel like as women, sometimes we don't spend enough time reflecting back on all of our successes. So taking a step back for a second, when you look at your career to date, what are some of your proudest moments or your biggest accomplishments that you like feel really, really proud of?
Yep. There's two. I'll do one early and then one more recently. And from an early one perspective, you know, when you are focused on solving problems for your customers, you're generally going to flourish. And we had a challenge back in the days of the Knot when I was running the registry business there, where one of the biggest conflicts or problems was getting a bride or a couples to tell people where they're registered. It's just very awkward and icky, right? Oh, it feels like you're saying, buy me a gift. I'm registered at Macy's. I'm registered at Target. And we at that time had built this registry business, but we're struggling with how do we get brides and couples to share our version of these links where they're registered so that we can make money. And I think you were part of this, Steve, way back then. And a team of us came up with a really brilliant idea that came from a brainstorming session, which was the wedding webpage.
Yep.
Right? So I was on that team and helped lead that team. And at the time, the wedding webpage was literally a page that was not pretty, as you remember. But it didn't matter. We had this genius idea of giving couples a way to share their story while we embedded in there these ideas and links to the registry. So we created an enormous monetization vehicle while making couples feel really good about telling their engagement stories. So I love that success, because today that is a standard of any couple getting married, is the personal wedding webpage. So I love telling the story of my role and my team's role in creating that. So that would be sort of proud moment number one. But proud moment number two would be the leap I made to Jor. I was very comfortable doing very well at the Knot, in a good role. I was the president. I had a fantastic team. But leaving there to come to a small startup that was smaller at the time than the business I ran at Macy's in the 1990s, it was so tiny. And I also knew it was troubled, by the way. The board was very clear with me. This is a troubled company. The idea is good, but there's problems there. There was no leadership team here at all. It was basically when I joined, me and a whole bunch of really smart and talented junior people that I was able to build and develop. But coming here to that small company that really no one really knew, to being what it is today, which is this global company that transacted $17 billion in wholesale GMV last year, that is the standard for the fashion industry where everyone knows our name. I mean, I am so proud of what the team and I built here to be able to take that company and make it into this.
I mean, both of those stories are such success stories. And honestly, like, the impact that you've made on the wedding industry is so tremendous. And I, like I said, I had the honor of being there for a small part of your journey, but it's really been tremendous. Now you see anybody who gets married, not only is the registry such a big part of what they do, but people are making like legit wedding websites. It's not even using these pages. Like, people are going very, very grand with these websites that live in perpetuity too. Like, they leave them up and they keep building on them. So it's crazy that you and your team got to be a part of that founding team that made the industry standard.
The She's So Sweet podcast is brought to you by Client Success. Client Success is an all-in-one customer success platform to help post-sale implementation and success teams manage customers from new to renew. Through an industry-leading platform approach, Client Success gives businesses an in-depth view into customer health, product usage trends, along with churn and risk data so that your team can not only retain customers, but help them grow as well. Whether it's managing customer onboarding workflows in shared portals, building custom health scores, tracking sentiment with NPS surveys, or doing more with less through AI and automations, Client Success gives customer success professionals a true one-stop platform to manage all aspects of the customer journey. To learn more about the industry's fastest to implement customer success platform, visit www.clientsuccess.com. That's Client Success. Simple, powerful customer success.
Now, obviously, one of the reasons why I invited you to be a guest on this show is because you are somebody who's always inspired me. And I'm sure anybody who's listening so far to this episode is already inspired. But your ability to just empower and uplift other women has always been felt by everyone around you. Kristen, you've always done a wonderful job of supporting everybody, whether they're on your team or not, right? I wasn't a part of your team. I was an extension of teams that you worked with. And I feel like you always very much made time and investment in me. And so one of the things that I loved, the saying is, empowered women empower women. So I know that it's something that you've just innately always done, but what are you specifically doing these days to help empower other women, especially as they take on leadership?
Yeah, a couple of things. And Christy, thank you for that. I might cry. I shouldn't cry in a podcast, but thank you. It's very touching. And I think, first of all, I just want to say really quickly, I knew you had a lot, you were a star quality when you were very, very young. So seeing you where you are today is very, you know, makes me very proud as well. And I love seeing women that I worked on early with succeeding in their careers. I think key is you do have to walk the walk and talk the talk. And we do that here at Jor. 65% of our company is female. 70% of our leadership team is female. We have equal pay here at Jor between men and women. We're firm on that. But I do really enjoy and continue to enjoy mentoring women and giving advice when needed for women, not only within Jor. And again, it's not only when people are working and staying at Jor. It's also when they're leaving Jor that I've given advice and stayed in touch with people. Because I'm a firm believer, you don't stay at one company your whole life. And, you know, if you've given Jor 2, 3, 4 years and it's time to move on, I want to see you be successful. And I'm proud of you for getting to that next level and finding that new experience. But I spend a lot of time, one of my favorite things is now that I'm 7 years in this CEO role, female in tech, I do have a lot of younger women in tech CEOs that I spend time with. And it's not official, but I'm always rooting them on LinkedIn. I do calls with them. When I'm at shows, I seek them out and find them because I know how hard it is in the beginning to be a CEO in general, never mind a female one in technology. And I just find a lot of fulfillment in helping women and just sharing my experiences, the good, the bad, and the ugly, so that they don't feel that they're making mistakes and the only ones who've made mistakes or misjudged something or are alone. Because the CEO role in general is very lonely. But as a female, it's even more so, I think.
Oh, that's so wonderful. I love that you make that time and that investment, because one of the things that we constantly hear from, especially guests that have been on this show, who obviously are wildly successful, is that it's not always easy to ask for help. And so many folks have said, you know, one of the things I wish I've done earlier in my career is just ask for help, be more vulnerable, put myself out there. And I love that you're just being very proactive in seeking out those opportunities without someone saying, like, I need help, I need that guidance. And you're offering it unsolicited to help guide and shape them. So I think you're really paying it forward, Kristen. And I'm sure everybody who works with you appreciates your feedback and your guidance.
Thank you. Thanks, Kristen.
Now, I know obviously being a C-level executive is not easy and is pretty demanding. So how have you been able to create balance in your life, right? You've talked about raising 4 children. I know as a mom, you never stop raising your children. I know I'm 42 and my mom is still raising me. So how do you find that balance, right? So how have you been able to figure out a balance that works for you? Now, I hear from women, listen, you get to a certain level and there really isn't balance, right? But how do you create something that feels good for you and your family that works while you're still managing the demands of this really important career that you've established?
Yeah, more than balance is probably prioritization in different moments. In today's world, I agree with that. With mobile devices and all the, you never disconnect, especially as a CEO, fully. But I will say one thing you do need to do is you need to build a trusted team around you so that you can step away. I think that I did not have that when I first started at JOR, just because there weren't senior people besides myself. But as I built up JOR and hired people, the key here is that are really good at the things that you aren't really good at. That's building a senior team, right? And letting them be themselves and doing and running their portions of the business. As I've done that, I've been really fortunate that I do at times now feel like I can step away for periods of time and it can be run. So number one is get that support network internally at your company. Get it externally too. I know I originally lived in New Hampshire when I started at various companies and did not have my mom nearby or my parents nearby. And I had at that time 3 kids under 5. And it was my neighbors and my friends that became my network so that we could help each other out. We built our own village when family couldn't be there. If you have family, fantastic. But if you don't, build that village. But when I say it's about prioritization, I truly mean that. There are times, I consider JOR one of my 5 children. So I have 4 and then there's JOR. And there are times that the baby JOR needs me more than my family does. And that's great if that's the case and I can give more attention to JOR. But then there's times that one of my 4 children or 2 or 3 at the same time of my children need me more. And I make the time to put the attention there. It can be done. It clearly involves a lot of scheduling and structure and support and choosing your shots of when it matters to be there, but it can be done. But it's about prioritization and, family always comes first for sure. And if you're head to head, but really scheduling and prioritization.
That's great. Now, how do you try to build in balance for yourself, right? Because you just talked a lot about how you're showing up for your family, and I'm sure your spouse is in there as well. But how do you show up for Kristen? What are the ways that you're investing in yourself? Because we all know you can't pour from an empty cup. So how are you kind of feeding yourself? What are the things that you do to invest in yourself, your growth, your health, your wellness? What are some of those things?
Yeah. So I'm still a runner today. I had mentioned that I ran track in college. I still do that. I run 5 days a week. I get up early morning and do it. And I don't run far. I don't need to. It's a mental health, getting my day started thing. That's super important to my mental health And honestly, to my ability to get more focused, I'm more focused after I do my runs. It clears my mind. I recently took up a couple of other habits in the couple of years. When I was younger, I was very artistic. So I was an athlete, but I also really enjoyed art, which I think speaks to my desire to be on a team, but also have creativity involved in it. So a couple of years ago, I taught myself how to decorate cookies, which sounds like...
I love that!
Okay. But it's so fun. And every holiday, I am famous for my decorated cookies that I bake and then decorate Christmas cookies or Easter cookies or whatever. And I find it very just soothing and a way to have an outlet that's not work-related. It ends up with something really fun, which is yummy cookies at the end and just... accomplishment. Like, look at this tray of cookies that I made. And then more recently, I wanted to even do more creativity. I taught myself how to crochet, which is also crazy, this past summer.
That.
And I now crochet at least something a month. And for me, it's nothing. This is very much my personality. I'm not making an Afghan. That's going to take way too long to show results. So I make these little stuffed animals, crochet animals that I finish in a couple of hours or less than a week that give me that accomplishment of like, I made this. So those are ways sort of downtime. I'm not someone who takes downtime and just sits there. I'm just not built that way.
Yep.
And if I sit there, my mind goes back to work and my wheels spin. So distracting myself with other accomplishments and other artistic things, whether it be athletics with running or the crochet or the cookies, it just makes me happy and I enjoy it and it gives me accomplishments and things outside of work.
I love that. Now, I have to ask two things. What was the last animal that you made?
Yeah. So I actually made Snoopy. I actually made Snoopy, who's very in right now. Snoopy
You've
is
so,
back in fashion.
My
everywhere.
Daughter... all over her room, her clothes, yes. Pajamas, yes. Stuffed animals on her bed, Build-A-Bear right now. I mean, she's 16 years old and we still have stuffed animals, but Snoopy is huge, made such
huge.
A big comeback.
Yes, I made two of them in a row, actually. I made one for my husband who loves Snoopy and I made one for my sister-in-law. But so Snoopy was the last one I made. Yep.
Okay. And then for Easter, what were the cookies? What was the design or what was the kind
of,
what was your favorite one that you made?
Egg-shaped cookies.
Okay.
Egg-shaped cookies with all various colored eggs. I'm not good at like, bunnies. Like it's too realistic for me. Like I'm good at things like eggs and Christmas trees and wreaths and snowmen.
Okay. Got it.
Designs.
Love it. Very good. Now, obviously, listen, you're not done growing and learning. You talk about this all the time. Right? I think we're all still always a work in progress. So how are you committing to your personal and professional growth as well?
Yeah, I belong to a lot of groups, and I still have mentors, even at you know at this juncture in my career that I can learn from. I read books, I go to webinars, I go to a lot of events, especially ones that are New York based that are easy to get to see what I can learn. You know, for me, I'm in technology, and not just personal development, but for my job, AI has come out of left field in the past year to be vital. And I wasn't born in that age, right? So I put myself into webinars and classes and just going places where I can ask people questions about it so that I can learn and understand it. So, I mean, anyone who thinks that they're done growing is making a huge mistake. You're always improving and growing. And look, when I thought I knew everything about leadership, a global pandemic hit. That was an entirely different level of leadership. And the groups coming out of school are very different, right? When I first got into the workforce, I'm a Gen X, and our first, I don't want to say challenge, but our first group, you, Christy, were the millennials, right? And you were different than us, which isn't a bad thing, but it's different, right? So learning how to, I feel like I learned how to manage you guys. We learned how to get work together. I get you guys. And now we have this whole other generation, Gen Z, who I don't even think you guys get, right?
No.
And they're my kids' ages, by the way. So you're always learning, whether it's management, whether it's for the job itself. You always have to learn in order to keep your leadership going and to continue to be somebody who can lead these companies through change.
Obviously, you're making these investments in your personal and professional growth, which is great. But now let's take a look back, right? If you could offer yourself a piece of advice earlier in your career, what would that advice be? And how do you believe that that would have changed your trajectory?
Yeah. One thing that I really didn't learn till I was a CEO, I didn't even know it when I was SVPs and executives in other companies, was I was always super passionate about my team, protecting them. I was definitely mother bear to my team and don't mess with my team. And it's only when I went to the next level as CEO that I realized that that's not always good. Meaning, yes, have your team's backs. Yes, support your team. But my team versus the overall good of the company sometimes conflicted. And I don't know that I saw that when I was a level down. I see it now because in this job, I saw some of my executives doing it. And I was able to say, okay, your team is doing okay, doing well, and that's great. But by doing that, you're actually harming this. And we need the company to work together better. And I think I wish I had, no one ever said it to me back then. And I almost wish someone had, because I didn't see it in myself then. Back then, I was like, my team, we're the best, you know? And now I'm like, I was a little too selfish with my team. And I think it could have been better for the company if I worked better. Not that I didn't work well with other teams. I think you know that I did, but protecting my team at the expense of the greater good, I think was probably a mistake I made early.
Wow. Okay. I feel like you literally were just offering me a piece of advice that I could take right now and go put something in practice. I definitely think that I probably operate a bit too much like that. So I'm going to go do some soul searching after our recording and go think about how I can be better. Very good. Now, I want to also talk about the evolution of your career. So obviously, this isn't it for you. Well, maybe it is, maybe it's not, but I'm sure you have goals because you've always had goals. So as you think about the evolution of your career, what does the future look like for you? What are you most excited about?
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy being an operator and being in the day-to-day of a company like Jor, and I'll be doing that for a while. But I actually think my next phase, once I decide to leave or something happens here, positive, I'm really passionate, and we opened up with this. I would like to be on boards, in particular, helping female CEOs. I think that my entire board was male until I put a female on it. And not that that's a bad thing, but I feel like I could have a really exciting impact to and helpful impact to female CEOs. And that's going to be where I'm going to put my focus, not just any board, but a board of a female run company where I feel I can be very, very helpful.
I couldn't agree more. I do believe that your impact would be felt tremendously in a role like that. And hopefully some lucky company will benefit from you sitting on their board one day. All right. Very good. Well, listen, before we wrap up today, what's the one thing you want our listeners to take away with them?
Yeah. I mean, I think I mentioned it early, but to remember that your career path is your choice and you should never be bullied into feeling bad about turning something down early in your career. It is about fulfillment for you. The bar is set by you, not by everybody else. And that definition of success is yours. So just always remember that. Don't let external forces determine success and what level you have to be at for it to be success. You find that balance and you determine that definition yourself.
I love that. And that's wonderful advice for us to end on today. Thank you so much for your time today, Kristen. Your journey has obviously always been an inspiration to me. I'm sure everybody listening today will also find tons of inspiration in your story. I'm super excited to see what the future holds for you. You never cease to amaze me. So I'm sure it's going to be continued to be filled with wonderful things. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Christy. And keep making your own story because it's pretty fabulous.
Thank you. Well, everyone, if you've enjoyed this episode, please rate and follow us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Subscribe on YouTube. Connect with me on LinkedIn. Thank you again, and we'll see you soon.
Hi, guys. I want to share a bit about an organization that I support called Wednesday Women. They're on a mission to increase the visibility of executive women leaders that you should know, learn from, and be inspired by. On LinkedIn, they share the profile of two amazing women each week, on Wednesdays, of course. And now just imagine if we all followed, amplified, and nominated the women that we want to see more of. Their initiative provides examples of women CEOs, founders, sales executives, technical leaders, and so many more. By supporting Wednesday Women, you'll see more of these professionals in your social feeds, of course, but also on stages, podcasts, and panels. If you're interested in learning more and supporting their initiative, head over to www.wednesdaywomen.org or follow them on LinkedIn.